So at the beginning of our time together this morning, I shared with you that I had an amazing experience on the Presbyterian Peacemaking Study Seminar. And that is absolutely true. It was an incredible trip, completely memorable. And I wish you all could have come with me. In fact, if they do it again, I'm going to invite you all to come with me. Are there any takers? Okay, you don't really have to answer, but so, okay, I took note. I do realize you may not all jump at the chance, especially considering that in those 9 days, we traveled about 1,300 miles, stayed in 5 different hotels, and had 21 scheduled stops. And that's not including any stops for gas or food or sleeping. And so I'm going to ask again, any takers? Oh, still? Okay. So before you commit to either going or not going on this future and hypothetical trip, I want to share a few other words that I would use to describe my experience to see if that would cause you to lean one way or another, actually to lean you to toward saying yes, should the opportunity present itself. So in addition to amazing and incredible and memorable, other words that I would use to describe this seminar are fun, beautiful, inspiring, meaningful, powerful, unforgettable, and even life-changing. And so now, any takers? Before we go any further, I want to share a few pictures from the trip that support these descriptions that I've shared. I'm not going to say very much about these pictures, but just to give you a little idea, our first stop was at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque. Then we worshiped on the first Sunday when Jennifer was speaking with you here at Laguna United Presbyterian Church on the Laguna Pueblo. And this is the only Native American congregation in the Santa Fe Presbytery. And now very quickly, some of the other highlights. We went to Acoma Pueblo. You can see the ancient, but some still lived in homes on top of the mesa. Chaco Canyon. We went to Window Rock, Arizona, very aptly named. That's the headquarters of the Navajo Nation. And the monument you see in the picture is, as you can tell, perhaps the monument to the Code Talkers from World War II. We went into a Navajo museum there, and they had one whole display on the Code Talkers. We went to Canyon du Chelly in Chinle, Arizona, and that's just a little bit of proof that I actually was on this trip, and these are not just pictures from tourist magazines. This is the home, they believe, of ancient Navajo people. We visited Loop Presbyterian Church, which is, as you see on the map, it's north of Winslow, Arizona, which is where Jennifer Holmes grew up. She said to me, in fact, that she had classmates that were from Loop. That banner is obviously from the inside of the church. It's written in Navajo with a Navajo shepherd. When we made it to Phoenix, we went to Central Presbyterian Church, which is an urban Native American congregation. At some of these other churches we had stopped, they fed us meals, and 4 meals in a row, lunch, dinner, we had Navajo tacos with fry bread. And I can tell a story about that maybe in the coffee hour. But we got to this church in Central Phoenix, and the pastor said, "Today you get an urban Indian lunch, and that is sandwiches and chips." We also had a quick visit with some folks at Vaquis Presbyterian Church on the Gila River Indian Reservation, which is south of Phoenix. So maybe you can get just a little bit of an idea why I would use the words that I used before, like amazing and incredible, beautiful and unforgettable, to describe this trip. So now, having seen just a few pictures, should that hypothetical future trip occur, any more takers? So now I might just be going to shoot myself in the foot and push any of you who maybe were leaning toward saying a hypothetical yes toward saying, no, thank you. This is not for me. Because in the interest of full disclosure, I need to share some other words that come to mind as descriptors of this time, and they include hard and heartbreaking and humbling and eye-opening and challenging and infuriating and embarrassing and painful and exhausting. So how about now? Any takers? Because in this trip, we also learned firsthand from Native people whose ancestors were directly affected hundreds of years ago and who continue to be affected today by some of the things that Jennifer and Gil talked about the last two Sundays here. Terrible, terrible things that were direct consequences of the doctrine of discovery and the European colonial mindset. We learned about the unilateral and usually violent removal of indigenous peoples from the vast majority of their land. You can't see the little key at the bottom, but that says American. The gray, of course, represents American land prior to European arrival. The black represents reservations today. We learned in some depth about the forced removal of some 100,000 Native children from their families and their subsequent transport to government or church-run boarding schools. I know you probably can't, well, you could probably read some of that, but a couple of highlights. This is from a display at the Heard Museum in Phoenix. It says the Indian problem was a topic of national debate. They wanted to, the founder of the Indian Rights Association stated in 1886 that his Christian reform movement wanted to deliver the Indian from the night of barbarism into the fair dawn of Christian civilization. The federal policy of forced assimilation was a war waged on children. As the Indian wars were winding down, government officials found it was less expensive to educate Native Americans than to fight wars. Commissioner on Indian Affairs estimated in 1881 that it cost nearly $1 million to kill an Indian, while it cost only $1,200 to enroll an Indian child for 8 years of schooling. And the purpose was not to educate them. It was to eliminate the Indian-ness, to save them, kill the Indian and save the man. Their hair was immediately cut. They were dressed in European clothing and they were given new names. One of the men that we spoke to in Phoenix, in his 40s, his last name was King. His name was Aaron King. He said, "King is not my name." It was a name given to one of his grandparents when he went to a boarding school. He said his Navajo name. Yeah, that name is too hard to say. We're going to give you the name King. So he doesn't know what his family name is. Here are two examples. Children that when they arrived and children after they had been there for a few years. The children were punished, often severely, for speaking their native language. And they experienced additional abuse of all types for any number of reasons. Additionally, we learned that they were generally not allowed to go home until they were 18. They were taken at 4, 5, 6, 10 years old, kept at these schools. They were not allowed to go home if they survived that long, which too many did not. And this was not something that happened only in the distant past. We think of it as, oh, that was in the 1800s. That's not something, that was so long ago. Many of the Native people that we spoke with had at least one grandparent. And for one of the leaders on our trip, a Navajo woman, her mom had gone to a boarding school. They were taught there that everything about being an indigenous person was bad, was wrong, was sinful, and needed to be completely eradicated. This is a quilt that was hanging in the museum, and you can't see the details of it, but in that middle row, Indian children are going up the steps. They took away their language. The nun is beating the child. They cut our hair. They took away our clothing. and they gave us a new name. They took away our identity. And there was more. We learn more about the more than 500 treaties the United States government has made with Native people and have not kept one of them. Not one of them has not been broken in some way. We learn more about the generational trauma that has been passed down from one generation to the next. We did an exercise that was a very visual and embodied exercise for us to help us understand the realities of how trauma starts in one generation, and when it's not dealt with, it gets heavier the next generation, and then that gets passed on to the next generation. And by the time you get to the children or the children's children, they're carrying this huge, huge load of unresolved trauma. We learn more about how Indigenous, Native women and children, women and girls, are 10 times more likely to experience some sort of violence, some sort of assault, than any other group in our population. We learn more about how the removal, the forced removal from their lands, and the subsequent diet provided by the government of commodities, as well as a more sedentary lifestyle, have affected their health for generations, contributing to the very high prevalence of diabetes, for example, and other health, very serious health concerns. We heard more and more as we listened and as we journeyed together, more and more that led me to use those other words that I used: hard, heartbreaking, humbling, eye-opening, infuriating, embarrassing, painful. So having shared a more complete picture now of this trip, I'll ask again, any takers? I hope so. I hope so. I know it's a hypothetical question, but those are exactly the kinds of places where we need people of faith, where we need people who are committed to the way of love. Those are the kinds of places where we need people who are committed to seeing the holy in one another, to seeking the holy within ourselves, who are committed to bringing forth what is good and sacred and oriented to love in the world around them. We need people of faith and people who are committed to the way of love in those places where it's hard, where you have to listen with humility, and where you have to really dig deep to be willing to be honest. We need people of faith in the places where the hurt is deep, where marginalization and oppression is embedded, and where the pain can be debilitating. We need people of faith in places where it's complicated and there's no easy fix and there's no quick answer. We need people of faith in the places where the inclination as a listener might be to feel guilty or defensive or simply incapacitated by the complexity of it all. And so I suggest that we are those kinds of people. We are that kind of people. As people who claim to be followers of Jesus, we are called to be that kind of people. And if we are indeed among that group, I am coming to believe that we should want to be in those places, or at least be willing to be in those places, because those are the places where profound truth can be found. First within ourselves and then among one another, if we are able to listen with love. Those are the places where sacred relationships can be forged. First with ourselves and then between one another, if we are able to listen with love. Those are the places where deep and much needed healing, desperately needed healing, can begin to happen. First within ourselves and then between and among one another, if we can listen with love. That's the kind of place that this trip was. And we listened. and we heard and we saw and we began to discover profound truth, and sacred relationships did begin to be forged. And I believe that deep and desperately needed healing began to happen. One of the Native women on this trip, toward the end of the trip, she sort of, in a group conversation, she just sat back and she said, "I don't think anything like this has ever happened before, where these people, where this group of white folks have come and just listened to us, just heard our stories." And she said, "It makes me feel hopeful." And she said earlier in the trip, she was sharing some stories with us that were hard to hear. And she said, "We don't want your pity. We don't want your guilt. We want you to hear us and to see us and to bear witness to our experiences and to our stories." And so that began to happen on this trip. And it will continue to happen here among us, I believe. So even if this trip doesn't present itself again, even if I don't have an opportunity to say, "Come on, let's go," we have other opportunities to go to those kinds of places, to be present in those places, to be people of faith who are committed to the way of love, who are committed to seeking the holy in one another, who are committed to seeking the holy within ourselves, who are committed to bringing forth what is good and sacred and oriented to love in the world around us. And if that is not needed today, I don't know what is. We are not lacking in opportunities to go to those places and to be those people, people who are followers of Jesus Christ, who are committed to the way of love as we understand it and continue to understand it in his life and death and resurrection. I wasn't able to take you all with me on this trip that I just experienced, but I would like to take you with me on this journey to those places. So one more time, any takers? Amen.